Hello, I'm Bex, and welcome to the Week Junior Show. I'm sitting here with three of the team from the Week Junior, the magazine making sense of the world for 8 to 14-year-olds. Today, I'm joined by editor Felicity.
Hello.
Writers Kieran.
Hello.
And Michael.
Hello.
And this week, we'll be talking about an amazing adventurer, Remembrance Sunday, and Tutankhamun's tomb. Plus, we'll be asking you whether young footballers should be allowed to head the ball. But first, speaking of Tutankhamun, or Tutankhamun, what is everyone's favourite historical discovery, Felicity?
Mine would have to be the Nazca Lines in Peru. These are over 800 straight lines, 300 geometric figures, and 70 animal and plant designs that have been carved into the sand. It's incredible because they were thought to be around 2,000 years old, but were only discovered in the 1930s when the first pilots started flying over the desert. And they're absolutely huge. Some of the straight lines run for up to 30 miles, and some of the designs, such as whales and spiders and monkeys, are as large as the Empire State Building in New York.
Wow, I'd never heard of that before. Wow.
Check it out. Yeah.
Kieran, how about you?
Yeah, I've gone for the Terracotta Army, which is a collection of about 8,000 life-sized soldiers made from clay that were built just over 2,000 years ago to protect the first emperor of China in the afterlife. And before he died, humans would often be sacrificed to go in the tombs of important people, but he decided he'd get 720,000 artists to make him some soldiers as well. And his tomb is still unopened to this day, so we don't know exactly what's in with him other than the fact that he's surrounded by this army of terracotta people.
They've done a very good job of protecting his tomb.
They've done very well.
Excellent work. Michael, how about you?
My favourite historical discovery is when the skeleton of King Richard III was found underneath a car park in Leicester, just because it goes to show that historical discoveries can happen anytime and be anywhere.
I was thinking about this. I think mine would be Pompeii, when the ruins of Pompeii under the volcano were discovered. That to me was always like, oh my goodness, that was years ago and still they're finding things now. Anyway, guys, what is your favourite fact from this week? You've had a really busy week, so Felicity, what have you learned?
My favourite fact from this week's magazine is that there are at least 6,000 species of earthworm.
Wow, that's, yeah, good solid fact. Kieran, how about you?
Yes, I learned this week that only one in every 3,000 tortoiseshell cats is male.
That is another solid animal fact. This is good collection.
Thank you. It's a good week for animals.
And Michael, what have you learned this week?
So this isn't an animal fact, but I learned that Owen Colfer, who wrote the Artemis Fowl books and spoke to us for this week's magazine, based some of the goblins and gnomes in the books on his four brothers, which I think is quite a good way of getting back at your siblings.
That is an excellent way of doing that. I love that. If you've learned an amazing fact this week, or perhaps you want to tell us about your favourite historical discovery, you totally can. Drop us an email, hello@theweekjunior.co.uk, or go to PopJam and find us at The Week Junior. So it's time for our real or rubbish story. This is a story in the magazine. I don't know it yet, but it may be real. It may be rubbish. Guys, who's going to tell me about it this week?
That would be me. Our real or rubbish story this week is a 9-year-old boy called Joe Whale, who was always getting told off at school for doodling and not concentrating. However, he started doing after school classes where he was coming up with these designs and illustrations. And now an owner of a local restaurant has decided to get Joe to decorate the walls of the restaurant with his incredible designs. And 1.5 million people online have now seen the results of his work. So is this real or rubbish?
I love this story. I want it to be real. That sounds really heartwarming and nice and lovely. I'm going to say it's real. I'm going to come back to it, though, because I generally change my mind halfway through the podcast. So if you don't know the answer yet, if you've not read your copy of the magazine, feel free to make your guess now and we can find out together before the end of the show. So what have been the big things happening in the world this week? What are your three favourite stories? Kieran, you can go first.
Yeah, my favourite story this week is about Remembrance Sunday, which is on the 10th of November this year. And it's just a chance to take a bit of time and remember people who've died during wars and other conflicts since 1914. So at 11 o'clock on Sunday, a lot of people will choose to take part in a 2-minute silence to sort of reflect and remember on people who've died while fighting. And also this year, the Poppy Appeal, which I think most of us will be familiar with, which gives money to the Royal British Legion, which is a charity that supports people who served in the armed forces. They've said that the poppy this year will also represent civilians who've died. So maybe people who weren't fighting in the war but happened to die as a result of conflict, or also from terrorist attacks. So it's a much more inclusive thing this year. And the traditions of it date back to the First World War, which ended on the 11th of November in 1918. And it was decided that every year after that, people would spend time on the 11th of November to remember those who died. And then during the Second World War, it changed slightly to become an event on every Sunday instead of on every 11th of November. But there's lots of ways to get involved. So you can, if you like, you could buy a poppy. That poppy appeal has raised an average of £1 a second since the First World War.
Wow.
Which just shows how many people take part in it. And there's also, you could go along to your local war memorial. You could watch the footage on the BBC of an event in London where a lot of the top politicians and the royal family go. Or you could do other things like reading a book. You know, Michael Mapurgo's written a lot of books around the First World War and Second World War. You could watch a film. You could go and see a show about something to do with that. So there's lots of ways to just sort of connect with history, mm-hmm. which I think is a great opportunity to do that. And we were talking about this yesterday, actually, that you might be sort of connecting with people from your own family past.
Yeah, there might be someone in your family or someone in your local community who fought in the Second World War, or who have memories of what it was about. So yeah, we thought it was a really important story because it's about the importance of, I suppose, remembering these people who made an extraordinary sacrifice so that we could live in a free country today. So yeah, dig around, ask people, and yeah, see what you can find out.
Yeah, and if you're listening to this after Sunday, I guess, drop us an email and tell us if you did something to commemorate Remembrance Sunday. Just email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. Next up, Michael, what is going on in your world this week?
So my favourite story this week is to do with Nirmal Purja, who has become the fastest person to climb the world's 14 highest mountains. Now, it took him 6 months to do, which, to give you an idea of how fast that actually is, the previous record holder, which was a South Korean adventurer called Kim Jang-ho, it took him 7 years, 10 months and 6 days to climb the 14 highest mountains. So to do it in 6 months is an incredible achievement. All of the mountains that he climbed are higher than 8,000 meters, and it includes the world's highest summit, Mount Everest. And actually, when he was climbing Mount Everest, he took a photo of the queue to get up to the top, which actually became quite famous around the world. You might have already seen it. If not, you can look it up. It shows you how busy it actually is now to get up to Everest. He actually also helped save some lives while he was going on the various climbs, helping out other people. And he completed it on the 29th of October at a mountain in China, which he actually had to get special permission from the government in order to climb, because it had been closed off to climbers because of actually how dangerous it was to do so. Five of the mountains were in Pakistan, seven were in Nepal, which is where he's from, and two were in China as well. And he had to use oxygen tanks to help him, and ropes as well that had been attached to the side of some of these mountains, which some people said might have given him a bit of an unfair advantage. However, Reinhold Messner, who was the first person to actually do this and climb the 14 highest mountains, said that what he did was a really unique achievement. Nirmal Purja, speaking about what he'd done, said that, you know, records are made to be broken, and that people are only limited by their imagination. If you don't dream, then you won't do it. Human beings are capable of doing amazing things.
That is awesome. I bet he must have had to prepare so much beforehand as well, like so much practice.
Ah, yeah, absolutely. And I mean, 6 months as well, it might sound like a long time when you first hear, you know, there's a lot you can do that time. But when you see that it's taken people years and years to do this, to be able to do it in such a quick amount of time, it really is an impressive feat of human endurance and fitness.
So Felicity, what have you learned this week?
My favourite story comes from the What's On page, and it's all about King Tutankhamun and his treasure that is going on a farewell tour of the world. Before it gets given a permanent home in Giza's new Grand Egyptian Museum in Cairo. So it's the last opportunity for people around the world in cities like Paris and London and New York to see some of the incredible treasure that was found. And if listeners don't know the story, this was the 20th century's most famous find. It all happened in 1922. When British archaeologist Howard Carter and his team literally stumbled across a rubble-filled stairway in the Valley of the Kings in Egypt. And they had almost given up on the search. They thought they would never, ever find this incredible tomb. And there's a very, very famous quote where the wealthy Lord Carnarvon, who was funding this expedition, called down to Howard Carter, who's in the tomb, and said, "Can you see anything?" And Carter replied, "Wonderful things, wonderful things." And inside were chariots and thrones and a golden bed, sort of dazzling. They'd been there undisturbed for over 3,000 years. So it really was the treasure find of the century. And now there's the opportunity to see these incredible treasures in London at the Saatchi Gallery. So that's my story of the week.
Now it's time for the big debate. Now, last week we discussed on the podcast whether there should be a general election this year. So, big debate. Here's what some of you had to say.
Yes, we've had loads of feedback on the debate, which is great, including some voice messages, including this one from Benjamin in Leamington Spa, who said,
"Don't think there should be another election because there was one really recently. And if they do it again, the answers will probably be the same and they won't do anything about it, like last time."
And we've also had Rosanna, who had this to say.
"I think that there should be another election because nothing is really happening about Brexit and we have new 18-year-olds that might want a say."
Kitty in London sent in this message.
"I think a general election is a really good idea because it is an opportunity for people in every part of the UK to choose their MP. The political party that wins the most seats in the House of Commons can form a new government and hopefully they can sort out all the issues that have divided the country over the last few years."
We also had Fabiana, who sent in an email saying, "I think there should be a general election because the country should be able to decide who is in charge rather than just one small part of the country."
And we also got an email from Jack in Surrey who says, "I think there should be a general election because the MPs can't agree on a Brexit deal and no party has a majority, making it hard to pass a deal. Having an election will solve the problem because a majority will allow us to break the deadlock and decide the best way forward."
And if you want to get involved with the podcast and tell us what you think of the big debate, it's really easy. If you want to, you can email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk or you can record a message and send it to us. Just grab a grown-up, record what you think of this week's debate and send it in. So this week, we're asking whether young footballers should be allowed to head the ball. So who can tell me a bit more?
Yes, so this story was inspired by a study at the University of Glasgow that looked at professional footballers and found that they were 3.5 times more likely to suffer from a brain disease called Alzheimer's, and that was likely because they head the ball when they're playing football. The Scottish Football Association is now considering introducing a ban to stop anyone under the age of 12 from heading the ball to help protect them, and a similar ban was introduced in the US in 2014. However, the issue has divided some people, and one expert suggested young players should just restrict the amount of time they spend practicing heading a ball instead of introducing an outright ban.
Okay, so I didn't know this was a thing. This is really interesting. We are challenging Felicity and Michael to give us their thoughts on this in just 1 minute as well. So Felicity, are you ready to go first?
No. Yes.
Okay, so Felicity is up right now. You are arguing for this ban.
I am.
Okay, excellent. So you've got 1 minute. Go.
Okay. I fully support a ban on heading footballs for the under 12s because I just think it's better to be safe than sorry. If we know that it can be damaging for professional footballers, then why is it not the case that it could also damage the under 12s? I don't think it's necessary for the game. You can still play a game of football without having to head the ball. So why not just get rid of it entirely? And besides, like, you could always, if you do bring in a ban for the under 12s, you could then head the ball once you're 13 or over. It doesn't have to be the rest of your life. It's just when you're young and when, you know, children's brains are growing and developing. I think that's a good idea. Finally, I think, like, if you did still want to head the ball, you could use something softer, like an inflatable beach ball, which means that you could still keep heading within the football game, but just without damaging people's brains.
Lovely stuff. Thank you very much for that, Felicity. Now, I believe Michael disagrees. Are you ready for your 1 minute of time?
I am.
Okay. Go.
So I agree that certainly it's always best to be better safe than sorry, but I think it's important to remember that this research does come from professional footballers who played many years ago and who were heading the ball a lot more than under 12s would be when they're playing. And I think having an outright ban would be a bit of an overreaction and be quite hard to enforce as well, because heading is a part of the game. The ball is going to go into the air, and sometimes the only way to score a goal or control the ball or pass to your teammate is by using the head. And I think it would stop under-12s from being able to enjoy the game as much and be able to get the full experience and develop, and it would make it harder for them maybe to then head the ball when they're older because they're not used to it. And I think, you know, there's so many famous headed goals in football. Just this summer in the Women's World Cup, Alex Morgan for the US, her winning goal against England in the semi-final was a header, and children like to be able to try and recreate those goals, and it's a fun part of learning the game and enjoying it. So I think maybe limiting it or changing things, but an outright ban I don't think would be the best idea.
Excellent. That was very fast talking. You had a lot of stuff to say. Well, okay, so that is your argument for and against. Let us know what you think by dropping us a line. You can respond to the poll at theweekjunior.co.uk/poll or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. Go and get involved. Tell us whether you think that heading in football should be banned. All right, now it's finally time for our real or rubbish reveal. Can we just recap the story a little bit, please?
Yeah, this is a story about 9-year-old Joe Whale, who got told off for doodling at school, but has now become the interior designer of a restaurant, and his designs have been seen by 1.5 million people online.
I think this is real because it is so Instagrammable and so perfect for I guess, press for the restaurant. I'm going to say it's real.
Drum roll, please. You're right, it's yes. Real. Yay. It is real. So the restaurant is called Number 4. It's in Shrewsbury in Shropshire. And Joe Whale's talent is really, really as impressive as it sounds. He's drawn skyscrapers, chocolate bars, pumpkins, rockets, mythical creatures, all of it.
Amazing. And can we see some pictures in the magazine?
Yes, you can on our That's Unbelievable page.
Brilliant stuff. So that is it for the Week Junior Show this week. Goodbye to Felicity.
Goodbye.
To Kieran.
Goodbye.
And Michael.
Goodbye.
Drop us a comment on PopJam at the Week Junior or email hello@theweekjunior.co.uk. And don't forget to rate, review and subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast from. Bye.
If you want to get your hands on a copy of the Week Junior magazine, we're offering a 6-week free trial. To get yours, head over to dennismags.co.uk/theweekjunior and use the code PODCAST.